to the Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show. Oliver O.T. Thomas, the early bird, and the entire WBOK listening audience. Man, we want to thank everybody who chimed in. I want to thank Edison Lewis, superintendent. We're going to see what happens July 1st. It's going to be interesting to track what happens in public education, his vision for public education, watching the scores get better, watching more kids graduate, more kids achieve, more move into the workforce, more parental involvement in our system. Jeff Thomas, we can talk about all these other issues, but if we don't have an educated workforce, if we don't have the next generation, the generation behind us doing a little better with the three R's, no matter what we do, we're going to have a problem.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Dr. Lewis inherited a troubled system and a system in transition. And it's kind of like herding cats as I see it. And I feel confident that he's going to do a good job. I'm hopeful and I'm supporting him, and I hope that he does great things. And, you know, given the early results, I'm optimistic that he will be able to be successful and transform our system. Because you're right, without good young people entering into our workforce, we're going to be in trouble.
No system, no culture, no place, no workforce, no general, no radio. Nothing can survive without somebody in line. Think 504. Unless somebody's there to take its place and move on and move the entity of the issue forward.
Ladies and gentlemen, you got to be sitting here in the audience, in the studio with me. This dude is Hollywood. I mean,
I got my swag,
man. I'm so impressed. This week we met with our media consultant. Let me tell you, OT is big time, ladies and gentlemen. The transformation is incredible. I don't know what happened. He used to come in here in shorts.
I hit my head in the wreck.
Right, his shorts, his underwear, a wife beater. Now this dude's got on sunshades, a three-piece it's incredible. I need a pair of sunshades. I need three-piece suit before I can continue in this segment.
I started from the bottom. Now I'm here.
Impressed. I'm impressed. This is an amazing transformation, ladies and gentlemen. You have to be sitting in here right now. It is fun.
First of all, man,
yes, sir.
We do have a lot of fun with the news. But we also deal with a lot of very serious issues.
I don't
have your agenda in front of me. I looked this.
I can give it to you.
Hold on a second. No, I do have it.
All right, good.
I do have it. I need to look. Look, our producer is a lot more thorough than I am. As always, Jeff, thank you for what you do with Think504.com.
Thank you for having me on WBOK.
A lot of very provocative issues, but issues that matter, whether it's world politics, whether what's happening with our school system and educating our kids, mm-hmm. public accountability,
yes,
private accountability,
yes.
You have been Black Source Media.
Yes.
You have been the voice for the writing and the editorials for over 250,000 people. And now we're looking at your brand right now is being accessed all throughout the world, man. So very proud of you for what you're doing. Your writing is, I'll say, first name Exa, last name Lunt. Your writing and your style of writing is excellent.
OT, thank you. I feel humbled by these comments that you're making. And we just want to continue to try to do a good job to improve our community, mm-hmm. to make our city a better place to be for black people. We want to uplift the lives of African-American families, particularly through African-American men. Mm-hmm. I think that if we do that, then all of the issues that we talk mm-hmm. about will be resolved. The source, the key, the linchpin is uplifting the lives of African-American men, boys, teenagers, young men, and grown men. And if we do that en masse, then our city will be a great place.
Definitely will make it a lot better for everybody else, huh? You won't have to watch us as much.
Yeah,
you won't have to knock us down as much. You won't have to conspire on us as much. What? And you won't have to exclude us.
You know, part of that is, you know, that's what we try to do. When we met with our media consultant, one of the things I said is that we need to change the narrative. And that's kind of what, that is part of the mission of Think 504. Because mm-hmm. the narrative that as portrayed in general in the mainstream media is a bias against African American men. Mm-hmm. It is a thought that African American men are dangerous to be, you know, feared and that kind of stuff. And as we highlight the successes of African American men, people like Dr. Henderson Lewis, people who are doing great things.
Whether you agree with them or not, in total, it's fine.
Sure,
but you have
nobody's perfect.
You have consistently said a more positive image of black men means more positive results in the societies where we function.
Exactly.
Period.
Right. Exactly right. And so when we offer critiques on what's going on, it is always with that in mind. If we uplift the lives of African American men, then we will make our city, our state, our country a great place to be.
Well, you know, it's kind of difficult to segue talking positive. How do we create a more positive image of what's happening with our president, our legislature, and the world right now? The culture war that's going on. I had Derek Johnson, the NAACP president, yesterday, and man, he talked about this whole this proliferation right now of dividing and conquering, in many cases, these race wars and battles that are going on. The role of the president, the role of the media in this culture war that you've specifically talked about, whether it's implicit bias, whether it's relying on old images and old distortions, it has to end.
It does. Here's the deal. President Trump is engaged in a culture war. It's not about... He's a Republican in name, and the Republicans in name are about conservative policies, conservative fiscal responsibility.
I think he's something else.
Listen, that's not at all what he's about. He is about 100% a culture war. Listen, white people in America feel threatened. White people in America feel their country slipping away. White people in America feel that they are being diminished. When you are a people of privilege and people talk about equality, for you that means discrimination. And on all different fronts, we're talking about, you know, first black people needed equal rights.
So you're saying that they're not hearing inclusion with many whites who've been comfortable, with many whites who've bought into the American dream, who've bought into these employers, but they're not hearing inclusion. They're hearing...
Takeover, taking away my rights. Right. Listen, when you talk about transfer in a Christian country, when you talk about different faiths, Muslims coming into the country, that is an attack on Christianity. They feel when you talk about sexual revolution, LGBTQ, that kind of stuff. To admit to people who live this Christian lifestyle, that is an assault on Christianity. So for people of privilege, for people who've had things to go their way, for people who've had the universe revolve around them, when that universe changes and expands, for them it's a shrinking of the universe. So what Donald Trump is involved in is transforming that, blunting that. He wants to, the census predicts that in 2025, or is it 2050?
2050. They're talking about 2040 right. to 2050, depending on who you talk to.
Right, that there will be...
Majority.
Minority.
Majority.
But listen, still, they're going to be the majority of the people in the country are still going to be whites. They're going to go from 64% of the population to 48% of the population. Mm-hmm. But they still will be the biggest... Group of people.
Right.
But when you add up all the different minorities, then it's more than 50%. Then it's 52% and 48% white. So, but their fear is that of white extinction. Their fear is the elimination of white privilege. Their fear are all of the assets and benefits that go along with being white in America. It allows them to have privilege. It allows them to not see police acting badly. It allows them to feel emboldened nowadays. And so the culture war is real. Trump is not a Republican. Trump is a culturalist, which is why he's meeting with Putin, who is another cultural ambassador for white supremacy.
And what you're saying is that you have leaders that are taking advantage of that. Rather than bringing us together and preparing us for the demographic changes,
sure.
What they're doing is dividing us and conquering us.
Sure, and capitalizing on it. I always remember the money. This is still a capitalist society. Right. And the protection of white supremacy is the protection. White supremacy means, for me, follow the money. It means access to and control of the resources in this country and in this world. And white people want to do that, and that's part of white supremacy. And they have complete control currently of the majority of the resources in this on this planet.
Well, 504-260-9265. Talking about majority of the resources, he has a lot of resources, man. Some of the best articles and editorials in this country, think504.com. 250,000 subscribers. If you're not subscribing to think504.com, you're really not being healthy. Your information is not healthy. Your information is not unbiased, and your information doesn't have the type of objectivity that allows you to make a decision. Jeff, I want to touch on that a minute. Mm-hmm. A lot of times when you write your articles, you have your point of view, mm-hmm. but you write them in such a way that the reader can have the information to make up their own opinion. Why do because you have some strong opinions, but you always leave an opening for folk to, here's the supporting information, here's the data, you decide.
Right. Kind of, I heard you this morning talking to Warren Bell, and he talked about how what he does is present a set of facts and then let thought provocateurs analyze it and come up with it. Maybe I'm a thought provocateur as well in the sense that we take information and we say, well, how, you know, basically what you hear about this information is you get this perspective mm-hmm. in the mainstream media. But that's not the only perspective.
Right,
and there,
right.
there are different points of view. And one is not better than the other necessarily unless somebody's just dead wrong. I mean, if you don't mind, I'll talk about what happened when you got – when you had your accident. Let's talk about that. I mean, the media tried to demonize
you. The ditch.
Yeah, I mean, the media tried to – it was all about, you know, things that happened to you in the past. It wasn't about the fact that we were wasting police manpower, that we were protecting the rights of another parish with our own police officers. Well, we have supposedly a police manpower shortage, and we got two officers in the hospital doing things that were damaging to your family, that were damaging to you. I mean, arresting people for traffic violations is silly. Oh, and we have a poll out there. I forgot about that. We can talk about that poll. And the results of that poll, let me just back up and say, you talked about that poll. I wrote an article about that poll. We had lots of people who visited the website.
Over 200,000 people?
Who visit, but you know, only about 150 people actually took the time to vote.
Okay.
I don't understand. But I think the numbers are, and I don't have it in front of me, but the last, I'll pull it up while I'm talking to you, but only I think 4% of the people thought the right thing to do is to arrest people for traffic violations.
Wow.
So.
Wow. 96%
said it was, there were three choices. One was, there was one question. Should you arrest people for traffic violations in other jurisdictions?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I think it was 4%.
Right.
No was 50%.
Okay.
And the other option was only for DWI or something serious, and a big number was on that option. But the point is that 95%, 96% of the people said we shouldn't be arresting people,
right.
And I don't think we should be arresting people except for anything for violent crime. Putting people in jail for nonviolent offenses of any sort, of any type.
You're actually bankrupting our society.
It bankrupts our society. It disrupts families.
Mm-hmm.
It causes more crime. It is. Does not make sense to do it.
Well, thankfully, I remember you wrote my wife Jasmine Thomas. Her comments were in your one of your articles that if nothing else, she would hope that what our family went through, that this policy would be changed. And it looks like now we're headed for a policy that won't allow another family to go through that. So whatever happened to me, I appreciate people caring and people being understanding. But as my wife said, if we can impact a change in this policy so that another family doesn't have to go through that, then that's a win, Jeff Thomas.
Well, and that is. And I'm good that you are bigger than me, and I would be a lot more hostile, and I would the point being that we should not be arresting people. But the bigger point is that when that happened to you, rather than focus on these real issues,
mm-hmm.
the focus was on your past. The focus was on some things that happened before, which is irrelevant, had nothing to do. The point, they were trying to demonize you. You, a pillar of the society, you, a guy who comes on this radio station every day bringing positive information, uplifting the lives of African-American people, of all people, making our city better. They want to make you to be a bad guy. That's what the mainstream media does, and that's what Think 504 fights against. And that's what I'm talking about, changing the narrative. We have to change this demonization of black people, this unfiltered bias towards black people being bad thing, a bad person, and change that to the positive things that happen that we do. And when we change the narrative, then things get better for us.
Well, we had the Image Makers at New Hope Church Saturday, where I was a speaker with the Brother Fatherhood Roundtable, and many groups had over 200 men from the ages of 3 or 4 years old to in their 80s come out. Over 200 men come out on a Saturday for a banquet acknowledging and changing and re-imaging African-American men. Jeff Thomas, are we going to have to separate ourselves from mainstream media? Is it the job of editorialists and journalists like yourself, folk working in the community, to no matter what we say, no matter how much pressure, no matter how much African-American men contribute in a positive way, is it solely our responsibility to reshape and change the image?
It absolutely positively
is. It's not going to happen if we don't.
What's going to continue is it's going to get worse. I mean, the culture war that we talked about, what Donald Trump is doing is doubling down on demonizing black people and people of color. I mean, he's gone to the point of separating children from their parents. I mean, so listen, it's up to us. It's up to us. They aren't going to come to save us. You say this all the time. They ain't coming to save us. People, we are living in New Orleans, Louisiana, and we know the government's going to fail us in a time of catastrophe.
Look, before we get to the rest of this agenda, and we will, I added something to the list that personal that bothers me, and I want your take on it because you make us think, right?
Sure.
I have this... this fast food restaurant. First of all, there's no such thing as fast food anymore. It should just be food, right?
That's right.
Because you go to fast food, and then you wait for your fast food.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not fast food.
That's right.
It's just food.
Okay.
I stopped at, I stopped at McDonald's on Broad Street this morning.
Hmm.
Just wanted to pick up something real quick. I had time, right? And I hurried up, and I waited. And then I hurried up. And then I waited.
Mm-hmm.
And the manager couldn't even get the people who were there to work to work.
Mm.
We can talk about all these other outside issues in our community. But when Malcolm X highlighted that we have allowed the system to take the ability to work away from the people who work to build this country, that's a whole bigger issue. And my father used to always say, if you're going to work, you might as well do
the work.
Work.
Mm-hmm.
That's another bigger issue in our community, that there was a work ethic amongst our community where, of course, it was forced labor. It was overutilized and undermanned. In many cases, it was abusive. But we always understood the challenge and the respect that you got from work. Is that another issue in our community where we have to begin to make young black men and women understand that, hey, man, look, there's honor in work?
You know, you're touching on something that is important to me.
You run a business. You're trying to get people to, we talked about this the other day, you're trying to get people to work.
I have some issues with some guys who are supposed to work for me. Certainly, let me just put this in the context of your McDonald's experience. I think it's important that companies properly train their employees. I think it's important that management provide people the option, the ability rather, to be successful at work. Mm-hmm. That to me includes full training, full pay, mm-hmm. those things. So part of it may be that McDonald's, I know they hire a lot of young kids during the summer, and I know that their pay isn't great. And I know that their training isn't thorough.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the problem at McDonald's could have been that. But let's talk about the
work.
Work. Let's talk about work. Absolutely. You know, part of my book that I'm writing, so I feel I can talk about it. And I'll say this. I'll say that a part of the paradigm that I see our lines are lit up and we can deal with them. We can talk to them. But part of the paradigm that we operate on is we want to do as little work as we can because we know we're being exploited by bosses who don't care about us, who treat us poorly, and that has filtered into our daily approach to life. So because we were exploited, because oftentimes on jobs today we're exploited. We're doing the yeoman's work, we're doing everything, and people who own the companies take home $300,000 and we take home $30,000. And we see those disparities and we see that we're doing the work. And so that causes some consternation for black people. And part of the way black people react is to not work. That's a part of it. Now, another part of it, I know you're laughing, another part of it is that we don't have the soft skills, as we talk about, in terms of understanding that it's important to go to work, understanding that it's important to communicate with your boss, understanding that it's important that when you're sick, you can say, you know what, I'm sorry, I'm not going to make it today. Understanding
being on time?
That's important that you're on time. Understanding that you work from 8 to 5 and you don't take a two-hour break in between. Let's take some of this calls.
Let's take this call. Line one, Brother Ronald. God bless you.
You're on with OT. Thank you for taking my call. I'll be real brief. I heard you say the McDonald's thing, and it's ironic. It's an African-American owner. There are 4 African-American McDonald's owners in the city. One of those guys, you go to any one of his stores, that's what you get when you go on Broad and Canal. You check out any of his stores, they do you that. But the other 3 owners, you go to their store, they tell you good morning, good afternoon, hello. One of the African-American owner stores got the National Award for Courtesy.
Yeah.
All right? So I'm just saying, but then, as you say, work ethic, Oliver, you brother as well, Jeff, when our folks work in the hotel, they didn't wear them uniforms to work. Mm-hmm. They put them in the bag. It was just, you just wasn't proud to walk and get the bus with a man uniform on. You change your clothes.
Yeah.
But you got a young lady with a $75 hairstyle, $45 nails on, and then you got a man uniform on. So thank you for taking my call. We have to discuss this issue.
Brother Ronald, that was a powerful piece. Let me say this. That's all another conversation. Yeah. One of the young ladies who waited on me had a $1,000 look in terms of what she put into her hair and her nails and her eyes and everything. But the look in her eyes,
the attitude is horrible.
There was something missing.
You go to any one of his stores as an African American, they dog you out, Alva. And at that particular store, if you want to get dog and horrible service, go there. And I'd have wrote National, and I'd have wrote him.
Thank you.
That's just the honor. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
That's a whole
another show, man. You know, maybe if we put more in our heart than on our head, maybe if we put more in our soul than in our style, our style and our head will line up with our soul and our heart. That's a whole other topic. When we come back, Essence.
Oh, how about that?
Essence is in New Orleans. Mr. Think 504, Jeff Thomas, making us what?
Think.
Making us think after the break.
WBOK, New Orleans.
You're listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
Welcome back to the Good Morning Show, 9:11 a.m. in the morning. For 300 years, people have left New Orleans with stories as their souvenirs. They have told stories of the best things they've ever eaten, music that made them dance, and the friends they've made after midnight. So to celebrate our city's tricentennial, we want to hear your stories from New Orleans and share them on social media and hashtag One Time in New Orleans. Email to NOLAstory@WBOK1230AM.com, and we'll read a few of your favorites on the air, sponsored by the New Orleans Tourism and Marketing Commission. And let's not forget about the Holy Cross Lutheran Health Fair. That's this Saturday at 6154 Press Drive with Dr. Corey Aber and Dr. Raja Thomas, Daughters of Charity, Dillard University, New Orleans East Hospital. That's this Saturday. Also, Fatherhood Roundtable, bowling with their kids at Southern University, University Center this weekend, and Teen Summit, Ronald Thomas and Brothers at Peace, man. The guy who brought us one of Paul Mooney's last concerts, and also the late Dick Gregory, his last sold-out concert here in New Orleans, one of his last. Brothers at Peace is sponsoring Teen Summit with yours truly, OT, and Rue Jude, man. That's for 11 o'clock this Saturday. We want our call, a misconcerned citizen. Please call back. We'll get right to your phone call. But in the studio with us, Jeff Thomas, it's Essence Time.
How about that? Whoa, isn't that great?
Man, folk descending from all over America. We know it's probably the biggest, largest black female convention, and a few brothers will be hanging around.
Absolutely.
Essence Weekend.
It's a bunch of women, so a bunch of guys are going to be lurking for sure.
lurking. Please don't lurk. This is not the time to be lurking. You get in trouble.
That's a good point. Absolutely. That. You can't lurk anymore.
Look, but don't touch.
That's right. That's right. But listen, you know, I enjoy going to the
compliment, but don't harass.
Don't do that. I enjoy going to the convention center. I haven't been to the concert in a number of years, but they have great.
I love the convention center.
They have great series and great talks and motivational
great
speakers.
Great shopping, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And exactly. I mean, one of the best marketplaces for black wares that you'll find
in
anywhere.
America.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, Essence is centered around the 4th of July, right? Mm-hmm. The 4th of July. And I know everybody is going to be putting out those grills. Independence Day, right? Putting out those grills, and let me just say, how many of us, and I know people are preparing, people putting money aside and buying ribs and chicken and the whole nine yards to celebrate Independence Day. It's a great thing. I wonder, though, how many people celebrated Juneteenth? That's June 19th.
Well, I think that's a pretty good question.
How many people even know what Juneteenth is exactly?
Well, the great John Mosley and many folk, you know, we celebrated it. We talked about it here.
You did.
On WBOK, but most people, you know, we're socially conditioned, man. Look, most people know America's accomplishments in the African American community, but most African Americans don't know African Americans' accomplishments
in the American community.
In the American community.
You know, I'll give you a good example. That brings me to, that's a great segue to one of the things I really want to talk about today, and that is the Maroons in New Orleans and the Battle of the Civil War. Since we're talking about Independence Day and well, the Civil War wasn't really about Independence Day, except for the South fought for their independence. Thankfully, they lost, so you and I probably wouldn't be on the radio right now.
Right.
we'd have somebody telling us what to say exactly. But do people know what the Maroons were and how the Maroons played an important role in the defeat of the Battle of New Orleans?
Most don't.
Let's talk about what the Maroons were a little bit and talk about the Battle of New Orleans, which was the head of the Confederacy, the capital of the Confederacy, and how David Farragut won the Battle of New Orleans. So the Maroons were, you know, part of the misconception is, you know, talking about changing the narrative.
Right.
The narrative is the slaves were happy and free and just thankful to be on those plantations doing that hard work. The fact is, the reason we have police today is because slaves constantly, regularly, daily escaped, They ran away. And a huge percentage of what escaped slaves did, they lived out in settlements, out in the woods, around Lake Bourne, and especially on the West Bank, around where Gretna is today. There were huge Maroon settlements. There was a Freetown, in fact, on the West Bank. And what the Maroons did, that's why we have the Mardi Gras Indians today, because the Mardi Gras Indians worked with the Maroons, the free slaves. They did trading and you know, that's why black people love to say I got Indian in me, because you know, the legacy is the Maroons. And of course we have the great Congo Square tradition here, where slaves were able to congregate at Congo Square, and it was a time when Maroons also came in and traded. And at night, Maroons traded with the people who lived on plantations and brought greens and spices, and that's why our food tastes so good nowadays, because of the Maroons and the things that they learned living off the land. But the Maroons also were traveling. They traveled the bayous. I mean, right now we have a concrete jungle, but the way to get around Louisiana back then was by boat. I mean, we had bayous, and so, you know, these
absolutely interconnecting bayous.
And they, you could go from the city of New Orleans, you could go to the Gulf of Mexico and back.
Right.
And by bayou. And the Maroons were skilled at this. They used small boats. What are these little boats called? That
P-Rogues.
Yeah, P-Rogues. Yeah. Exactly right. Well, you know what? The people who started doing that were the Maroons. They've created these boats that now we call them P-Rogues, and Cajuns take credit for it. But the fact is, Maroons used these boats and traveled the waterways back and forth.
It was how commerce happened, and shipping in many cases.
Exactly right. So now let's talk a little bit about the Civil War and the Battle of New Orleans and how black people actually impacted that battle, how black people, Maroons, we are responsible for our freedom here in New Orleans, and that we aren't doing better things with that freedom. You know, we don't have that work ethic that you talked about today. It's because we don't know this story. And the narrative has been that we are lazy. The narrative, we are infected by the disease of white supremacy, like you always say. It's a plague that affects many people. And the part of the belief in white supremacy is the belief in white and black inferiority, and we take that hook, line, and sinker. But I digress a little bit to get back to the point of the Civil War and get back to the point of the Battle of New Orleans and how the Maroons impacted that. Well, this is what happened. The South strategy for the Civil War was, well, a big part of Civil War battles were shipping battles. Well, not shipping battles, were naval battles.
Right.
I mean, the Union Navy really killed the South Navy, and we had, you know, what do you call those folks that go underwater?
Submarines.
Thank you. I sometimes forget things. Submarines were important back then. All of this kind of stuff. But the real thing that I want to talk about is the South strategy was to actually have a chain at the mouth of the river. From there were two forts: Fort Pike, Fort Jackson. Right? And the chains were supposed to stop any Union boats from coming up the river. Right? And so the chain was going to be the way we protected the South. I see you got calls coming in, and let me just get this one little thing out. But the way the chain was actually defeated, the way the chain was actually weakened, was every spring when the floods come from the north.
Right.
The Maroons used these huge logs to dislodge the chains, to weaken the chains.
Right.
So those chains were completely ineffective. Right. And Colonel David Farragut, who led the Union Brigade across up from the Gulf up the Mississippi River to New Orleans to capture New Orleans, was aware of this fact, and he was able to come in at night with guns blazing and just blow past the two pikes, the two forts, and those two forts went. The white Southerners just retreated and left.
Very important in terms of the abolition of slavery. If they don't capture New Orleans, then the Confederacy is still very strong. Let's go to the lines right now. Line one, Brother Rip, you're on with OT Jeff Thomas in the early group.
Yes, sir. I'm listening to your history, and your history is 1812. My history starts in 1699 when people came here and settled from John Law. When he created the Senegal, he brought people from Senegal here to New Orleans. They did not start New Orleans until 1718. They brought in the first slaves until 1719, and the condemned from Europe came in 1720 with 80 prostitutes. And that is the reality of how New Orleans started. So when you start confusing the 1828 Congo Square, the law that was passed to let those people be on that area, that tells me that you don't understand the history that existed for 100 years before 1812.
Wow.
Yes, there was runaway slaves running all the way in the Barrett Territory. Yes, there was Maroon. But that Maroon population existed after the 1830 when those Europeans that came from Haiti decided to come over and try to implement the plantation. In the early stages, from 1718 to 1730, it was about education. It was about the archdiocese running this thing, and that they brought slaves in here to bring up the grow whites so they can learn how to survive. And at the same period of time, they had those blacks that came from Haiti with Santo Domingo that came in here that had to teach us how to start a group on saying, Monsieur, that's had to be taught to us. So therefore, you people who start talking with this history, don't timeline it and don't put it into the secret. You're miseducating people.
So you're right.
Congo Square did never exist. There was Congo Plan. Congo Plan. And that Congo stuff was based upon the fact of what was happening in the Congo with Leopoldville killing. The word square comes from P.G. Bergon Square. And that did not come into existence, die into Congo Square, until Clint Davis came back from Woodstock. So get your history straight when you're coming out here. And first of all, I think the greatest thing that ever happened to African Americans in this city was on April 19th, when the African American Heritage Culture Center was awarded to Governor Nicholas C. Wolf. But that is not news to people. Yes, I was out there. And yes, we and as far as the so-called history, oh, man, let me get out of here, because the stuff you're talking don't even make sense to some people.
Well, you know, I gave a distilled version of some facts. You brought in, you put it in historical context, but the facts are that there were Maroons that helped to knock down the chain, that David Farragut was able to come up the river and defeat the South, and New Orleans was lost to the Confederacy, and it was a big part of what happened.
And congratulations on the awarding of the Governor Nichols Street Wharf to the African American Slave Ship Museum Group. And Brother Rip and that whole contingent history has been made. More history in the making.
Right. So, but you know, so Rip brings up something that's important, and we're going to segue into this next section, which is really important, which is talking about the transfer of wealth and public assets from private ownership into private ownership. And this is a big thing that's happening. The one of the biggest problems in New Orleans is, even though we're 60-some% of the population, the inequity that you always talk about is a real thing. Mm-hmm. That the wealth and wage gaps are real and pernicious.
The disparities post Katrina are even larger.
Exactly right. And the way that this is continuing today, so one of the ways that we can change this, one of the things that we can do about this is we can look at the way public assets are being transferred to private people, and that transfer of wealth is generational. That transfer of wealth could be for African Americans. That transfer of wealth could be something that we need to have a part of. You know, whenever we talk about these big projects, we're always talking about we get a piece of the construction pie, that we fight for DBE part of the projects. I'm talking about ownership of the projects. I'm talking about how these let's look at.
We're going to take our caller, because this is a really deep subject that when we come back after the break, we're going to dedicate the rest of our time to this, because I want to go all the way back to, I think, the former Indianapolis mayor, Lake Goldstein, who started this effort to privatize government public entities. It was something that happened, I think, back in the late 80s and early 90s. Mm-hmm. How even he abandoned that, because he said, hey, hold on a second. Just because we privatize and just because we allow people to take over public entities, it doesn't mean it's cheaper. And it doesn't mean you actually get a better product. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about rewarding investors with public institutions that create generational wealth, Jeff Thomas, we're going to slow down on this piece and we're going to walk down this road, because you're on to something extremely important. We're going to Pastor Story is going to hold. Pastor Story is going to hold until we come back after the break.
Okay, great.
WBOK, 1230 AM, The People's Station.
You're listening to The Good Morning Show with Oliver O.T. Thomas.
We're back. Lord, I can't wait till we have reality radio on VH1.
I got all my boxing gloves.
All the stuff for you and the early bird be saying off the air. I'm glad I'm not like y'all. We can go to the lines right now, man, before we get back on our conversation about taking advantage of being intentional about public entities and public wealth, and creating generational private wealth for certain families and certain institutions by giving up public access to public entities. That's a powerful conversation we're going to have. But first, we're going to talk to Line 1, Pastor Story. You're on with O.T., the Early Bird, and Jeff Thomas.
Good morning, O.T. Let me take a second to try to put this together, what I'm about to say.
Mm-hmm.
But when an author writes a book, sometimes, you know, when the book is edited, you know, by others, you know, corrections and things are made, and you know, mistakes are corrected and things of that type. I'm saying that to say that I want to thank your guest, first of all, for the information that he was sharing
with us
on a historical basis.
Thank you, Pastor Story.
But I don't know who the previous caller was, but I also want to chastise him for the way in which he attacked your guest. Now, even if your guest was somewhat wrong in his facts, we all are wrong in our facts, but the caller didn't have to call in and just try to chastise him with such arrogance. And I think that's part of the problem that's contributing to us as being a divided community. Instead of him calling in, making some historical corrections, he's going to try to put your guest down. And I think he was totally out of order.
Thank you. Thanks, Pastor. Let me just say, my facts weren't wrong.
I want to stand by what I said. There were Maroons. Sure, they were there Maroons in 16, what did he say?
99.
1699, absolutely. Were there Maroons during the Civil War? Yeah. Absolutely. Were the Maroons helpful to the Union Army? Absolutely. Did David Farragut come blow by a chain that had been loosened by Maroon?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not certain that I made any historical errors.
You just talked about a different era.
Right. I talked about a point in time. I mm-hmm. talked about different elements, mm-hmm. and maybe it sounded like I was conflating them. If I did that, that's incorrect, but I don't think I did that. I think what I did was talk about the Battle of New Orleans and how David Farragut was able to come by at night and blow by the two ports, forts, and the chain had, which was the central defense mechanism the South used to defend New Orleans, was weakened, and he was able to come in. And so I stand by that, and I don't know what we're talking about.
Well, you made that point. You know, we're gonna get to our next caller, James, online too. Before we get to this subject, Jeff Thomas of Think 504, and I. Jeff is investigating and looking at and talking about editorializing and writing about how public assets, mm-hmm. public buildings, public institutions are being used to leverage generational wealth mm-hmm. for certain families and
right.
for certain businesses.
Right.
And the need for leadership to be intentional about including in a major way African-American business and business interests, instead of just giving it away to the same families in many cases and the same institutions, the same private entities that are taking advantage of public assets. So that's
Absolutely.
A powerful conversation we're going to have after we go to James. James, you're on with OT, the early bird, and Mr. Think504.com.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, good brother.
Well, I was going to say that the last caller hit it, but I just want to call that brother out personally. He always come with the facts, and I appreciate him, but Bobby Rip, you was tripping. You ain't going to get nowhere with me talking to me like I'm some fool.
Yeah.
I'm trying to catch up to where you at, and you're not going to disrespect, you know, somebody for trying to piece together the puzzle that you already figured out. That's wrong.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bobby Rip, that's very disrespectful. You should call back.
Thank you.
Second,
yeah.
Guys, you know, the fact of, y'all talked about the kids not willing to work. They don't understand the value of work because they don't understand the value of anything.
Mm.
You have people that want $40,000 vehicles, $50,000 vehicles, and then when they get them and have them for a week,
right.
you get inside the car and it's full of McDonald's wrapping, trash, and
chicken
all kind
bones,
of
chicken
food.
Bones, French fries on the floor. Fast food wrappers all over the car.
You ain't gonna value nothing.
Right.
What you out here killing, stealing, and
Great
barely
point.
Working for it for?
Great point.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So to start, it ain't training, bro. You could train anybody. You could train anybody. Mm-hmm. And start with just a basic discipline. Get up, brush your teeth, wash your feet, comb your hair, put your clothes on, and look like you're going to be busy about some work.
Thank you. Thank you, James. I appreciate
you. He's right.
Hey, James, God bless you, man. Have a great weekend, you and your family, too.
I want to thank James and the pastor for coming to my defense. But let me just say, I don't take offense at what Rip did.
No, Brother Rip is one of the most knowledgeable people on African-American history and events in this country. He knows New Orleans and he knows its history,
sure,
like better than many history professors, and we give him credit for that.
Absolutely, absolutely right. And if he thinks I was wrong about something, then he should, in fact, say it. Now, I just want to leave it there. I don't have an issue with Brother Rip. Good luck to him, and same for me.
Let's get to this important topic. There are a lot of public institutions and public assets out there that are being traded and leveraged for certain families and certain businesses. One right now that's being discussed is a charity,
mm-hmm,
a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
We see the World Trade Center, public asset. We see the Convention Center, and now this Convention Center Hotel. Very familiar names who are taking advantage, who will, a generation wealth will be passed to their families forever. And none of the major players are African-American in a city that's majority African-American.
All right, let's talk about what's happening and talk about why it's egregious and why it's important that our political leaders stand up for black people right now. What's happening is this. You talk about transforming public assets and transferring them to private ownership. So first of all, for example, the Convention Center has a new hotel that's supposed to be going up. The way that's going to be financed is the Convention Center is going to give the private owners $50 million.
Mm-hmm.
The Convention Center is going to give a TIF some proceeds from sales at the hotel.
And the land.
And the land, giving it to them. And these are our public dollars. This is our public money. And they are getting it for free. And the fact is that it's these white families that have this generational wealth, and they are continuing to have this generational wealth. And if in our city, if our government leaders don't stand up for us, if the mayor, the city council, the convention center, the commissioners, everybody needs to put a halt to this, and there needs to be not any goals, not any tries, not even any things that we want to possibly have happen, some real finite lines in the sand about how much money is going to be in those white people's hands and how much money is going to be in black families' hands. I mean, let's keep it real. Let's keep it distilled. Let's keep it down to the bottom line. The bottom line is this. We're talking about Daryl Berger and Joe Yeager getting $500 million asset from the citizens of the city of New Orleans. And they're going to talk about, you're going to get some jobs. You're going to get, well, when we talk about equity, when we talk about transformational wealth, when we talk about transformational projects that the city controls, these are the kinds of things that transform the city. This is what eliminates crime. This is what transforms the landscape of the city. You know, back in the 70s, New Orleans, Atlanta, and Houston were cities about the same size. In fact, New Orleans was bigger than all of them.
New Orleans was bigger.
But, you know, today, Houston has 4 million people. The city of Houston, Harris County, has 4 million people.
And all of those oil companies that used to be headquartered here
are there. And the state of Louisiana has 4 million people. So that gives you an idea how big the city of Houston is.
Now let's begin to narrow down and focus for our listening audience. The World Trade Center,
mm-hmm,
that land is, mm-hmm, a public asset.
Yes, Bill Luton.
It's being turned over to developed by a private corporation.
Right.
That's a major advantage for that private entity because now you have one of the most prime locations in the South.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't yours,
mm-mm,
but it's being transformed to you,
mm-hmm,
to create a $350 million opportunity for the life of the project. You're going to get paid. And your family's family.
Oh, no. It's not the life of the project, O.T. So it's only about 40 years that
40
they're going to get.
Okay.
40 years that they're going to get all of the profits from.
No, not some. Yeah, okay.
All of
for
the profits.
40 years.
100% of the profits. Yeah. They're going to get a TIF. They're going to have been given money, cash up front to fund, mm-hmm, the project. So the story always goes that black people don't have the assets. Well, you know, the state, the convention center has the assets. They have the cash.
They're sitting on 300.
Exactly right.
Almost $300 million.
That money needs to be going. The black developers, there are black real estate developers in this city. Now, they may not be as big as Daryl, mm-hmm, Berger and Joe Yeager, but that's because they have had resources and access to deals like this in previous years. And we're not going to have them in 30 years from now, 40 years from now, if we don't do this today. If we don't do this, if we don't change this now, we have an opportunity now to make transformational changes to the landscape of the city of New Orleans and transfer some wealth from white families to black families. I mean, listen, this is what we talked about earlier talked a little bit about white people feeling that they're being discriminated against. You know, we're setting the table straight. They have had 400 years of advantages. They had 400 years of access to deals, of government giving them access to deals, and we have had none. And so we need to change that. Now, that particular, these three deals.
Charity hospital.
They are going to transfer over $2 billion. Mm-hmm. And at the life of the project, over the life of the project, it's going to be more money than that. 30, 40 years from now, you're going to have people who have resources and access to cash and business opportunities that are going to flow from this. And so it trickles. And the thing is that it doesn't trickle to us because we haven't participated early on.
In many cases, as you have said, they're getting the benefit of the public asset.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting benefit of cash infusions, whether it's tax credits and TIFs.
And they're getting public cash
mm-hmm. to actually leverage the best possible finance deals.
Mm-hmm.
They also get to act as the contractor, contract managers, and companies that actually do. So you're taking your money off the top. You're guaranteed a certain percentage. So even if the project fails in years and decades to come, you've created more generational wealth for you and your family and your company. Even if it doesn't exist 40 or 50 or 60 years down the road.
50 years down the road is when they plan to give it back to the convention center anyway. So you're right. In the interim, there are going to be millions and millions and millions of dollars made, hundreds of millions of dollars made annually on these projects.
So let me ask you a question then.
Yes, sir.
When these deals are done, especially if it's a public asset, why don't political leaders say, hey, hold on a second.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a female donor. Here's an African American contractor. Here's an African American entrepreneur. Let's make sure that they have a percentage of this project. Make sure that they have a participation in these projects, so that their families and their communities can have the same participation for generations. Why haven't we not concentrated in shaped projects like that?
That's what I'm talking about. That is the problem, and that's the difference between Atlanta and New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
In Atlanta, Maynard Jackson did those things. You're not going to get any of this government money if you aren't doing contracting and with African Americans. We need to do that now. This is an opportunity now. We can't go back. We can't change anything that has happened. We do have these three projects that are happening now that are transformational that we need to take charge of. We need the leaders now. This is their time. Mayor Cantrell, this is your time.
I just got a text from Mr. 411 and one of our contributors, our brother Jack, who says too often, and this is real talk, too often political entities have convinced African Americans to be more brokers or to leverage with pennies on the dollar than to put themselves in a position to be prime partners.
That's right.
And have major interest in the development aspect of it. And he is contending that the only way we're going to be able to develop generational transformational wealth is not that you be a front or you be a sub or you be a minor participant, but that you have major interest over the life of the project.
That's correct. And that's what we need. We need to have black people owning these projects. We need 50, 60, 70, 80. We need 100% of these projects. I mean,
well, this is a very serious side. Let's go to our callers.
Okay.
Guys, Jeff Thomas is onto something that is probably one of the most serious challenges to our economic survival in this town, given the amount of money coming through this town, the amount of public entities that are going to be leveraged or sold off in this town. It's going to be interesting to see how they're. I want to contribute some time and some space to watching these developments, because this could make a major impact on our community, especially economically if we're involved. Line one, Big Set. Lines are lit up.
Hey,
you're on with
Big Set. Look, OT and Jeff.
Yeah.
When you're used to uncompensated labor,
mm-hmm.
it's an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the problem. But also, too, we still have to, what Jeff said, take lemons and make lemonade. Because when he was talking about the power plant with energy, that's already a done deal. If it's done already, see what we can get out of it.
Thank you.
And I think he's right, too, also. I heard him say once before, you know, we can't go to the bank.
We
got to get some of this government welfare.
About it, right? If it wasn't for Think504.com, if it wasn't for what I did with the Good Morning Show and Warren Bell did, energy got off the hook. You see where energy didn't put $1 million into maintenance and improvement of their lines. The city council left them off the hook.
But OT, what they talking about at the city council? Who's fine? We know this fine. They did it. What about that? Talking about all that ain't going to do nothing. Talk about what we going to get out of this.
Well, hey.
Put something out of that.
Okay, let's go to the lines, man. Guys. Jeff Thomas is on to one of the most powerful discussions we can have right now. How do we begin to leverage these public assets, right? These public assets where public entities in the state are going to basically underwrite multi-million dollar deals and we're not a prominent piece of those projects. That's a powerful discussion. Line two, Eric, you're on with Jeff Thomas, OT and Early Bird.
Hey, God bless y'all. And all this is coming together. I just want to fall behind all the calls. We should not berate and destroy our own people just because we're trying to show how smart we are. My second point is, who are some of the black real estate developers in New Orleans and what are some of the projects that they've done? So I think until we get state support, we have to work on, focus on developing our own real estate deals and projects. So who are some of the black real estate developers in New Orleans and what are some of the things that they've done?
Well, Jeff Thomas is one of them on a small scale, man. It would be great to have someone like you involved. Who are some of the others?
The guy who owns Metro Disposal, Jimmy Woods, some. There is Delicia Boyd who does some
Delicia
projects.
Boyd, yeah, absolutely.
There is David. I don't know. He probably doesn't want me to mention his name because he has
just
a public
say David,
job.
Then.
Yeah, David, who does a bunch of political.
Just David.
Who does a bunch of real estate deals around town. There are plenty. There are lots. And this is the thing, though. You can be a no-name, and I don't mean it like that. You can be somebody who doesn't have a big repertoire in your wheelhouse, but that this is the kind of job that is transformational. All you need is financing, and there are plenty of people who are willing to step up and do financing, and you need the money from the state entity that has the cash, and you need the TIFs.
That's what the big guys are using anyway.
That's all they're doing. They aren't brilliant. They aren't brilliant real estate. The deals are identified. This is turnkey kind of operation. All you have to do is build them, and they will come. And the fact of the matter is that they can be a part of the projects as well to lead some of their experience and expertise. But the point is that we need to have full participation, not some little 10% of the construction contract. We need to have 50% participation in these projects.
Thank you.
Is Pat Swilling and the McKenna's, are they considered to be real estate developers?
There you go.
Absolutely.
You go.
That's another two great look. I don't understand why now some political entity or some political leadership hasn't identified Pat Swilling or Ricky Jackson or the McKenna's, right? Folk who have money, they ought to be part of some of these. They can come up with some cash.
They can get financing.
I think Pat is frustrated with politics. He's opted out of it. But if I were a political leader, I'd be sitting down with him, saying, "Hey, man, brother, you've been successful at some mid-level to minor developments.
Mm-hmm.
How about me brokering a meeting with you and the big guys so we can leverage your money into what's going on with some of these bigger deals?" But you have to be intentional when you do that. You can't have political agendas when you do that, and you can't be mad at people if they didn't support you. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. You're right.
Thank you, Eric.
Those are two great names that he brought up.
Line three.
Beverly McKinney.
Alvin, Puzzle Master, man. You're on with Jeff Thomas.
Now, the next thing, and good morning to everyone and everybody. The next thing, and especially to the flyby listeners who listen, because this is the subject that we've been talking about for years, economics. Money is a byproduct of economics. If we're not part of the economics, we can't have the money. We can't fix our community. So, when we talk about those intentional things, OT and Jeff, it's just like y'all said. We need the project, Okay, stop hindering us when you talk about our credit line or talk about our credit. I understand you can't have a 200 credit score and get a $200 million deal. But if you got made or if you got two or three different DBE companies or black owned minority, however you want to nomenclate it and give us these labels, if you got a percentage of them, you know who they are. Why not? Okay, idea. Mm-hmm. Why not, instead of giving these people or these big corporations, these builders and properties, why not start small with us then?
Orleans
Parish School Board did not or land bank all these different schools in our neighborhood communities, call itself, quote unquote, let it out to the highest bidder. Why not take one or two of these neighborhoods where these schools are at and get the minority businesses together? Mm. Now you can develop them, and then you get the doggone apprenticeship program and get the teenagers that's out there that we complaining about and that y'all almost said that y'all are being even about, and put them in these apprenticeship programs, and now you can really start something literally from the ground up.
Thank you, Puzzle Master.
Again, when you talk about intentional economics concerning us, it's always we get wrong. It's a law. It's not in this. It's not in that.
Right. One of the things that One of the things he talked about, you may not have great credit. These guys are not even using their own money. They're using our money. They're getting free tax. I want to make that clear. They're getting free money from the convention center. It's cash money in their pockets.
Pat Swillen, Ricky Jackson.
There you go.
Delisha Boyd.
There you go.
Tyra Hernandez.
There you go.
Jeff Thomas.
Uh-oh.
Pete, the guy does the appraisal. Pete, I know he's involved in some land. We have a whole
Beverly McKenna.
Beverly McKenna. You got folk like Jimmy Woods, Albert, people who have access to cash.
Right.
When we invest in creating generational wealth, especially using public assets, right? The families that participate will make money in the beginning.
That's right.
In the end,
their children, their grandchildren,
and their children's children will benefit from those public assets being transferred.
And we haven't had that in New Orleans. This is what we need.
Hopefully, one of our political leaders will call a meeting and identify the few Negroes in this town that do have some cash. And how we can begin to use and leverage our political power is no quid pro quo.
That's right.
You're not doing anything intentional, but just like these other folk have been identified, you say, hey, you know what? If you're going to use public assets, let's be intentional.
That's right.
Let's make sure we have some African American. Some ethnic, some cultural participation.
We need to have black people from New Orleans participating in this project. I'm going to say
Jeff
like
Thomas,
that.
We're going to continue watching these projects and talking about this?
I'm going to be writing on them. People go to Think 504. We're going to have issues and articles brought out.
How public assets and public facilities and public land and public buildings are turned into private treasures for families for generations to come. That is something to take a look at and watch. And we're going to do that on the Good Morning Show. Man, guys, everybody, make sure you have a wonderful week, man. Make sure we're supporting the Tricentennial. You listen to the Good Morning Show, sponsored by the New Orleans Marketing Commission in honor of the Tricentennial. Let's not forget about the health fair at the Lutheran, Holy Cross Lutheran Church. That's this Saturday. Teen Summit, guys. The New Orleans Jazz Market, the Black Expo, up at 624. Louisiana Avenue, and then Father Roundtable, Bowling with Our Kids at Suno, 11 o'clock Saturday. A lot going on. God bless y'all. Thank Jeff Thomas, thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you, OT, for having me on. And
how you like my shades, bro?
You Hollywood, man. You Hollywood. I like that shirt, those shades, man. It's better than those shorts you used.
Everybody have a wonderful weekend, guys.